Up until recently, most people using computers bought their software in a box and installed it on their computer hard drive. Up until recently, the Microsoft Windows operating system was the dominant player in computing. That was up until recently. With its own operating system, Apple has overtaken Microsoft in market capitalization, and then there's Google's Chrome and Android operating system, and many others. So, not everyone has remained faithful to one operating system. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we explore operating system monogamy with the computer guys. That plus, how accessible are computers for those with special needs? And of course, we plug into the latest tech news in the lightning round on Central Standard after this hour's NPR News. Good morning, Kansas City. It was the Mozilla and Netscape co-founder and open source technology enthusiast Jamie Zawinski who once asked, why should someone have to retain themselves from using a new application that does the same basic thing as the old application just because something as trivial as the operating system is changed out from underneath them? No doubt a lot of people who have worked with Microsoft, Apple, or even Linux operating systems or Google Chrome or Android over the years have asked that same question that he asked. Today, we try to find some answers. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Joining us now for the show to talk about the OS, or operating system, are our computer guys, George Costello, an Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant with Ideology. Welcome back to Central Standard, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Tell us about what an operating system is and when it rose to prominence in computing. I know that's a big question, but talk about that.
It's the blood, brains, and nervous system of your computer. So you have to have something that'll boot it up in the morning, get it out of bed, and that's what the operating system does. It kind of opens up its eyes and ears and lets it interact with you and the rest of the world.
Blood, brains, eyes, and ears. George?
Pretty much the same thing. In Apple's case, what they did was put in a group of standard routines like the way that you would display windows and the way certain activities were to happen so that they were common to all applications and maintained a sort of a uniform interface.
Apple was the first company to move away from the command line user interface.
Right.
Talk about that and the role of the operating system in that.
Well, that goes back to the story of Steve Jobs visiting the Xerox Park research facility in California, where he saw the first crude mouse and the first graphical user interface that they had developed there. And he realized immediately that the simplification of the experience was what was going to resonate with the public. And they made a deal, and the rest is history.
And, of course, there's a backstory from Microsoft, too, Bill Gates and DOS. How does that work into the operating system framework for what we later know as Windows?
When did the Apple Macintosh with its OS come out?
The very first one.
84, right?
Well, the Mac, yeah. But before that, the Apple II was back, you know, in the late 70s.
Right. So Windows came out in 1985. So they had about a 5 or 6 year lag between when Apple started and made some waves in the market,
right,
and when they could put some kind of usable graphical user interface out there for the world to use, Windows 1, and so what's that been? 15, almost 30 years.
How has the importance of the operating system evolved or devolved to where we are today? Thomas O'Brien.
It was really important back in the old days because people, if you were lucky or unlucky enough to be around back then, your way to interact with a computer, which was usually via a terminal, then the people who minded the operating system store were these people wearing white jackets walking on raised floors in glass-walled rooms.
Temperature control.
Right, taking care of everything so that you could fire up your little green phosphor terminal and do your work. When they when the personal computer came around, all of a sudden people had to interact with the operating system directly, and many of the early people who started using early personal computers had to have lessons. They had to go to classes in order to know how to use and interact with the operating system.
I think everybody had to have lessons.
No, well, I don't know. I think that the Macintosh was probably the first commercial consumer device that didn't really require lessons.
That's true. I remember the very first time that I saw a Mac, and it was rather intuitive. I mean, you got the knack of moving a mouse around and pulling down menus. It was pretty easy to master.
But over time, as the operating system evolved for both Mac users and Windows users, when do we start to see user, programmer, and developer preferences for operating systems?
I'm not going to answer that question just yet, but, but I am going to say this. You know, the operating system also kind of took the place of the apps that we have today, because instead of having stores where you could just download something to, you know, tell you what the weather is going to be like, the apps were built into the operating system. So in the early days, it was very important because not only did it run your computer, but it also had a few kind of utility-type applications that people used that made them made it a little bit more important. Now, when did it start to diverge? Much more recently than that. My guess would be somewhere in the, 5 or 6 years ago maybe.
So very recently.
Yeah, not that long ago.
George, do we know why certain programmers or developers or even users prefer one operating system over another?
Well, sure. In one sense, it used to be that it was much easier to develop for the PC than it was for the Mac, because the Mac had a more complex language and you had to do things Apple's way, and you had to develop everything so that it was, you know, seamless and transparent, where on the PC side, there were basically no rules. I mean, you could Well, there were rules, but I mean, as far as the way that you displayed certain things or whatever, you could do it your way, and you weren't bound to a common thread.
It was a more open platform,
yeah, it was
and
more
so
open,
you could break the rules if you want.
Right.
But if you tried to break the rules with Apple ever, you were smacked down.
So why did the operating system go from a utility coupled with applications to sort of being a sort of background running platform for applications to sit on today?
Well, but the operating system's always been that way.
Right.
I mean, what's really important in, you know, it's an office machine as it started out, right? So what was important was productivity. And so you had to get past the operating system in order to get into your applications.
Right.
You know, and then you started to type your letters or do whatever you were going to do. If you, you know, contrast that with the olden days where you had, you know, a 35 or 40 pound Selectric typewriter sitting on your desk if you wanted to do that kind of thing, words. If you wanted to do spreadsheets and stuff, I don't even remember how that worked. I don't think there, you know, there were calculators, separate electronic devices that did that sort of thing.
I mean, like
scary.
Olivetti's, you mean?
So the computer put it all together.
Yeah, the other thing about operating systems is you have to have a way to deal and manipulate the data that you're the files that you're generating, and the OS interacts with originally it was floppy drives, later it was a hard drive, and so on, to move data, you know, back and forth and in and out of the computer itself.
And we'll talk about how that has changed with today's mobile space in a minute, but right now, what is operating system monogamy, Thomas O'Brien?
Well, I think that what we've seen with Apple early on, we are really seeing with Google and Microsoft now. Microsoft is finally jumping into the game as of this Friday when they release Windows 8, their new operating system, because it is designed to operate essentially similarly on your PC, on your tablet, and on your phone. So the Surface kind of
metaphor
or experience or interface
platform operating system
is going to be available across and uniform across all of those types of devices.
And Microsoft wants you to remain faithful over that Surface.
Right, and they want you to store all of your files on SkyDrive in the cloud, and then that way you are kind of stuck with, you are married to Microsoft. Well, the same thing applies to Apple. The similar thing applies to Google. And So you have to decide whether that's a value proposition for you or not.
Is that a value proposition for most people? Most people are pretty platform agnostic.
We should ask them. I don't
know. We will. We will.
You know, I think a lot of people have Android phones that use Apple computers.
True.
Right?
That's true. But what we've really seen in the since the introduction of the iPhone, which was really a game changer, we have witnessed a growth in the sales of Macintosh computers. I mean, here recently, you know, when HP and the rest of the Lenovo and these other people are reporting lower sales, Apple continues to chalk up higher unit sales as a result, I think, of people's exposure, you know, first to the smartphone and then later to the iPad. And it's being part of a family, like you say, where the experience is similar from the smallest tool to the largest and most productive one. So it's working in Apple's favor.
But Apple has a problem because it has two different OSs, one for its portable handheld devices, the iPad and the iPhone, and then it's got a completely separate operating system for its computers, its desktop and laptop
computers. Yeah, but you're suggesting there that there's a giant chasm between the two, and I don't really see that.
Will there be interoperability or a sort of seamless integration with that, though?
Well, they're trying to do it now. I mean, starting in the last couple of iterations of the OS, because they sell so many iPhones and iPads, they sell a lot more of those than they do computers. So what they're doing is they're migrating some of the icons and concepts from those simpler devices back into the Mac OS. And that's essentially been the reason for issuing the last couple editions of the of OS X.
They're all getting on the bandwagon now. They all want you to be in their ecosystem so that you are monogamous with that particular system or family,
right?
Because then they make more money and hopefully you're happier.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. We're talking about operating systems and their place historically in computing and today in the era of platform agnostic convergence. Our guests are the computer guys, George Costello, he's an Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise consultant with Ideology. Kansas City, are you cheating on your operating system? Microsoft Windows, Apple, Mac OS, the iPhone OS, maybe you're an Android or Chrome fan. What is your favorite operating system? And do you step out on that operating system every once in a while? We like to hear whether you use all or none of these. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also hit us up on Twitter, where our handle is at KCURCST. Facebook is also an option, of course. Central Standard at KCUR.org. So many options to talk about your torrid trysts with your operating system outside of Windows or outside of Apple. Maybe you take Linux for a spin every once in a while. Join the conversation. Once again, the number is 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. We're talking about operating systems today on Central Standard. What makes an operating system effective, and what makes one ineffective, Thomas O'Brien?
So one way to contrast that, I think a lot of it is marketing, frankly.
Really?
Sure. You know, I think that when the marketing matches the user experience, it amplifies the effectiveness of the operating system in people's their perception. Perception is reality to a large degree because, once again, they work. I'll give you an example. Microsoft released one several years ago called Vista. And Vista has been known as sort of a
critically and commercially maligned operating system.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. They promised more than they could deliver. The big problem with Vista was that it was really slow. It was, it was just really hard to. You just didn't have that feel that it was reacting to you as alertly and crisply as your previous.
There were lots of complaints as well about the user interface.
Right. They moved around the furniture and people couldn't find out where it was. What they tried to do with Vista is they tried to mask a lot of the OS experience, thinking it wasn't important for people. And then people thought, hey, I need to do this. And they couldn't find it and the whole thing blew up in their face.
Are you monogamous to your operating system, whether it be mobile or desktop? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Have you told Windows that Windows is your one and only to go out and use Chrome? We want to know your story of a turret computing affair. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We're going to go to Justin in Raytown. Welcome to Central Standard, Justin.
Hey, thanks. I've called in before. I discovered Ubuntu, a Linux operating system, probably 3 or 4 years ago. I've been an enthusiast ever since. I wanted to note that it doesn't, at this point in time, maybe it's not advantageous to Canonical, the maintainer of the operating system, right, but they don't require monogamy. Actually, they have a lot of ways and hacks of getting around monogamy and working across OSs and different platforms and everything. And as far as emulators and different things you can use. So there is at least one operating system out there that doesn't kind of require a marriage.
Thank you very much, Justin. What do you know about Ubuntu or Ubuntu?
Ubuntu. You know, we always give it short shrift on this program. And
it's
we
a Linux-based system.
It's a flavor of Linux. It's really good. The problem with Linux early on was that it sort of split into different flavors. There was Fedora, Red Hat Linux. There was CentOS Linux. There were, you know, I don't know, BSD. There were a whole bunch of different ones. And I think people got confused. Also, to load Linux, you had to be sort of a rocket scientist back in the day. Well, all that was changed. And Ubuntu was one of the, was probably the version of Linux that really resolved that problem. You didn't have the installation issues that you had before. It loaded seamlessly, and it had a better-looking graphical interface that was much more friendly and similar to Windows or the Mac interface than ever before.
Yeah.
It actually has gotten traction. Linux is a tremendous operating system in terms of stability, in terms of, you know, all of the kind of utilitarian things that people don't really notice. But what it doesn't have behind it is this massive marketing campaign. I mean, Microsoft's going to spend $1 billion pushing Windows 8 when they release starting Friday. And that's a lot of money. And Apple spends a tremendous amount of money pushing the Mac and the Apple OS. And so you've got Ubuntu, which a lot of tech people use. A lot of people in other countries particularly use Ubuntu. And it's extremely stable and extremely good.
I think the important thing to point out here is Ubuntu is free if you have the time and effort and energy, as well as other operating systems that are open source.
Correct.
Gary in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I was just calling in to make a comment, mostly. I have been an Apple pioneer since 1982. I started out with Macintosh, and I never touched a Windows machine until I was forced into it in a job situation several years later. But I have been a teacher of Macintosh and all the apps, and I was one of the first desktop publishers before that phrase was ever coined. And I've stuck with it, and I have supported Macintosh users, 2,000 computers at Hallmark Cards for several years. And I just think that my observation about Microsoft and Windows and such is that if it isn't difficult to operate, it's not working fine. That's how I see Windows. You know,
if Windows isn't difficult to operate, it isn't working.
And it's better to let the computer do all the work for you, and then have it be the tool to get your work done. And that's just the way it's been. I just purchased a new iMac, and it's fantastic. It's got the most powerful machine I've ever had. It's got the quad core, you know, the i7 processor. I've got 16 gig of RAM and the 27 inch monitor, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been a graphic artist and desktop publisher and phone support person for Garmin also for a long time, using the Mac versions. And I always run into the most difficult situations are people with Windows trying to get things to work properly.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much. Talk about why people prefer some operating systems over another like Gary. Gary seemed to go on and on about how much he loved Macs.
Well, to me, the defining characteristic of the Mac OS was its intuitiveness, you know, how easy it was to understand how to use it. I mean, I remember back in the day when I was first getting into computers and I didn't have a clue, so I took some courses, you know, and on the IBM PC and so forth, and you'd spend days, you know, where they would teach you some of the ins and outs of DOS and the like, and it just never resonated with me. So along comes the Mac, and I walked into a computer store, and within minutes, again, like I said earlier, you just get the idea of how the mouse works, and we pull down windows and so forth. It was just easier for me to get a handle on. And so I think it's ease of use that's really the key here.
Well, it certainly wasn't availability of applications. Because
not in the beginning, no.
And not for 20 years. You couldn't do things on the Mac that you could do on Windows machines just because people were doing software for specific purposes that, for instance, you know, some of the statistics packages and things that people used in business that they didn't ever get to the Mac.
No, but you had Excel early on. And Word and those kinds of major applications, so it wasn't like you were in a desert. I mean, you could do useful work, you just couldn't do as much of it in as many different ways.
We talked about Vista earlier. Now let me open up this point in the discussion. Tech companies are always upgrading their operating systems over a period of time at various intervals, sometimes monthly, sometimes quarterly, sometimes yearly. Why is it sometimes hit or miss in what the next version will be in terms of its operating efficiency? We talked about Vista and its lukewarm to tepid reception in the computing community. And then Apple also had a couple operating system duds. Why does that happen?
I think sometimes they overreach, and also sometimes it's a matter of a changing technology. I mean, you know, what Apple had to do was to navigate a change from using a PowerPC processor to using the cheaper Intel processors, which required a lot of changes in their operating system. What Microsoft has done has been slightly different. They've always pushed hardware when they've upgraded their operating system, or just generally have. So in other words, the drive and the capacity of hard drives has really been pushed by Microsoft because, as some people would say, their systems are bloated and too big, but also just because they've seen where the trajectory of the hardware is going and they've tried to take advantage of it as much as they can in their new systems. You know, Apple tends to revise its operating system more frequently than Microsoft does. I think that Apple's system is much more under control and less difficult to upgrade because Microsoft has to be compatible with a whole lot of third-party stuff they have no control over.
We're talking operating systems. Jennifer in Kansas City, Missouri. Jennifer, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Yes, hello. How are
hi.
You? No problem.
Good. I think it's a really funny conversation, actually, because I happen to be, traditionally I'm a graphic designer type person, so I like the Mac because I think the programs act more intuitive on a Mac. However, I work for a local government, and they are strictly Windows. So I got buddy-buddy with the IT guys, and they hooked me up with Linux. I'm on a Fedora 17 right now. And the open-source programs, I feel lied to. I never knew about these things. You know, I've invested in these Adobe suites for years, and these programs act just like them. Sorry, I'm outside. And they're free, and they're amazing. And so I'm sort of a convert. I just thought, you know, I think it's interesting about the way your guests were talking about the lack of marketing behind the Linux, because I think if people knew how amazing and free, especially in this economy, there would be a mass exodus from a lot of the other operating systems.
I'm with you, Jennifer. I think you're right on target.
Thank you, Jennifer. How come there hasn't been a mass exodus? Is it because of all the advertising? Is it because we're just so lazy and used to Windows? Are
no.
we sheep out here? What is it?
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Well, but there's no big single entity behind Linux that, like you said, there still exists different flavors. I mean, there's no one company that makes a business of focusing on that OS and making updates and changes and bringing it along. So it lacks the focus, really, that you get from a Microsoft or an Apple.
The other thing about Linux, and I'm certainly in favor of it, but it is also being co-opted by some of the larger companies these days. And I'm saying that, I don't know, you know, like Oracle bought, what was it that they bought?
Java?
but they bought a couple of Linux. They bought the MySQL database. Oh. They bought some software that has traditionally been focused on Linux computers. And the thing about open source that I think confuses people is that you have an open source project like a database, and it can work great, and people can share and do the open source thing the way that is intended, and it's great. But there can also be a commercial company that markets their services around that particular project, and that is where it becomes kind of quasi-commercial. So it's a little complicated, and I think it confuses people.
We should point out that Google's Chrome operating system is based on some of the Linux architecture that
Correct.
We've been talking about, that is an operating system that is open source. And Jeff confesses via email his favorite OS is a Linux flavor known as Crunchbag. Unfortunately, he's had to cheat on her, Crunchbag. He uses her as a metaphor there. Sorry for being enthusiastic on that and convincing people out here that they had to use that metaphor. But, for instance, Garmin's update app only runs on Windows and Mac, so I have to use Windows 7 to box some of those applications. Thank you, Jeff, for confessing about your trysts against Crunchbang. Sam called in to ask, will Windows bring a next-generation OS to Nextbox? Do we know what's going on with that? Will they bring the next version of the OS to Xbox?
Unknown.
Unknown.
I don't know. The Xbox
Unknown.
Is so phenomenally popular.
Unknown entity. We're going to go to Joseph in Shawnee. Welcome to Central Standard, Joseph. Joseph, are you there?
Maybe
we
not.
We don't have Joseph. We got Charles in KCMO. Charles, are you there? We don't have Charles. How does the smartphone change the way we look at operating systems? The smartphone.
It may not change for very long. I mean, smartphones, the good thing about them is they just work, and they have these little atomistic applications. They do one thing. You can download them really easily, push a button, and there it is. So it makes it really, really simple. However, the bad guys are catching up with smartphones, and they're starting to make inroads and make it more hazardous to use apps on your smartphone. So you need to be very careful.
And we now have Charles.
Good.
Charles, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah. I just had a quick comment. I don't have a job right now, but God's taking care of me. So if you're saying what I think I'm hearing, I'm saying, if Apple has the best operating system, I'll take a bite.
Wow. A double entendre. If Apple has the best operating system, I will take a bite. Thank you very much, Charles, for your contribution to this conversation. With web mobile computing in the cloud, are we looking at an eventual decline of the operating system as we've known it and as we know it, George?
Well, what you're going to see is a decline in the purchase of larger desktop computers. I mean, the OS is going to continue to play some kind of a major role, but with the advent of the proliferation of all these different devices, from smartphones to tablets to desktops, what you've really got now is a choice. And the question is using the right tool to do the job. And it used to be that it was just a desktop computer or a laptop, but now you have choices.
Our guests are computer guys George Costello, an Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant with Ideology. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we talk about tips on how to make the computing experience more accessible to those with special needs. And we want to ask our listeners right now who use assistive technology on their computers or have loved ones that use assistive technology on their computers, what do you use and where did you find it? You can respond on KCUR's Facebook page and look for today's Central Standard posting or tweet to us at KCURCST about your uses of assistive technology. We'll get back to that, plus the technology lightning round. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Central Standard. I am indeed Jabalani LaFall, your host here on KCUR. What's called assistive technology has been around for centuries. In 1808, Pellegrino Turi of Italy built the first typewriter for his blind friend, the Countess Caroline, which later became the standard for typing instruments for the blind. And even the telephone itself was a result of Alexander Graham Bell's early work with the hearing impaired and trying to improve concepts for the hearing impaired in that community. We've come even further today. Our guests are the computer guys, George Costello, an Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant with Ideology. In this segment, we switch gears for a few to talk about ways to make technology more accessible to those with special needs. And we want to ask our listeners, who among you use assistive technology on their computers or your loved ones' computers? What do you use and where did you find it? Talk to us on KCUR's Facebook page and also look for today's Central Standard posting and tweet it to us at KCURCST. Our Twitter handle is at KCURCST. You can also call in if you want, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. How do you use assistive technology for people with special needs? Computing for people with special needs. How is the computing world adapted to people with special needs, Tom?
Probably by being forced to, but also, you know, there's the thing about the computer is it's one of these all-in-one devices, right? It can do lots of different things, not one specific application. And similarly, it has to appeal to or be usable by people who have different kinds of deficits or disabilities or whatever you might want to call it. So, you know, you have to what they are trying to do and what they've generally increased their ability to do over the years is provide ways for that computer to be effective for people with vision issues or people with hearing issues or people with other issues.
There's even
motor issues.
Right, there's even cognitive issue. And what would you recommend that computer users with special needs? Do you recommend, George, that they get some type of assessment from perhaps an occupational therapist or perhaps their family doctor before they think about what type of suites to use on a computer?
Well, not necessarily. As you get older, I mean, you get beyond the age of 40, you're not there yet. But
how do you know?
I do know. You're 36.
You looked it up.
I am 82.
Yes, you are. Your eyesight just naturally starts to degrade, you know, beyond the age of 40. And the older you get, the more assistance you need in the form of a reader or glasses or whatever it might happen to be. So everybody has the need for some of this at some point in their life. So what I'm suggesting here is if it's minor like this, then the Apple OS has things built into it already.
Such as?
Well, there's you can make the text larger. You can change from black on white to white on black if that would help you see things better. If your problem is not eyesight but maybe hearing, there are ways to deal with that. You can have the computer read text to you, for example. And Apple was a leader in this area early on. I mean, going all the way back, I forget where it started exactly, but it would have been back somewhere around System 7 or thereabouts, where they started building in little aids to help you do some of this stuff. They have little magnifiers that will move over the screen and blow up. You can zoom in and zoom out, for example, to see a page better. All of that's available right now in OS X. It's on the iPad to a slightly more limited extent. So all of those things are available to anyone. Now, if you have a real problem, let's say you're Stephen Hawking, you know, and you're paralyzed and you can't move.
And you're a genius?
And you're a genius and you want to use a computer. He's got that computer that's built into his wheelchair.
And his head.
And his head. There are more sophisticated devices, of course, that do cost money, like blowing into a tube to make the cursor move on the screen. And, of course, for that, you would need to talk to rehabilitative services and so on. KU Med's got a great department that does some of that kind of work.
I also want to mention Alpha Point, which is a nonprofit that works with people with sight issues, and The Whole Person, another nonprofit that works with people with varying types of disabilities. So there's, that's well known in the community, and every community usually has some support. The good thing is that the Windows operating system and the Apple operating systems both are have things that will help.
And certainly as baby boomers age into those golden years, this could be a huge market for tablet and computer makers in adjusting and creating those types of applications, as well as amenable hardware to the usage.
Well, it already is. I mean, yeah. The baby boomers are getting close to retirement now, so.
I know.
They got those big old fat mice that you can move around so you don't have to grip them too tightly.
Or a keyboard that has bigger type on it, you know.
Text-to-speech and speech-to-text programs, you talked a little bit about that. Those are some good tools as well. Are there any apps or application suites that speak specifically to that, voice recognition software or speech-to-text?
Well, yeah, you know, Nuance is a company that has kind of acquired the Dragon speech recognition technology. Apple has its own speech recognition technology built in, so does Microsoft. Some of them focus more on like on medical applications because they have a kind of jargon that they use and terms that are, you know, very technical. And so you can add those to your computer, which probably doesn't have too much to do with accessibility. But, you know, the other thing is it's not just talking to your computer, but it's telling it what to do. And so there's a difference between having it just convert your text to or your speech to text. It's also listening to your speech and doing something on the computer, having it convert it to a command. Likewise, the other way works, where it will tell you what it's doing so that you can navigate the computer without having to be able to see what's going on the screen.
And that's one of the beauties of Siri, you know, which has had its share of publicity. But the same capability exists in Android, where you can, you know, do dictation and so forth. Really, Siri points the new generation in devices where you'll be able to maybe skip using a keyboard or a mouse and just talk directly.
For search or command.
For search or commands or whatever. So Siri, in that sense, performs a twofold function. On a smartphone where it's difficult to type because, you know, the screen's so small and it's glass and all of that, you can talk to it and dictate to it. Just anybody can do that. On the other hand, if you're disabled in some way, you could use that technology to help you navigate around the computer. So that kind of capability is the future.
Is the true thing to help disabled people or people with special needs the marriage of hardware and software, a combination of the two, sort of ergonomic hardware along with software that's amenable to the purposes of people with special needs.
It's all got to work together, and the whole deal is that everybody should have access to be able to use their computer, whether they have something that they need a little help with or not. There shouldn't be a dividing line between somebody who can do something and somebody who can't. So these technologies are really important to level that playing field and give people who might not ordinarily have an opportunity the opportunity that they can take and run with.
That's an important point.
Ladies and gentlemen, we plan to revisit this issue of accessibility and assistive technology. Write in for you users that use assistive technology on your computers or on your smartphones. Tell us where you found your resources on KCUR's Facebook page. You can also tweet to us at KCURCST, like Joe tweeted to us. He says, browsers are now adding accessibility support as well as we'll post the link we sent on our Facebook page and on the Central Standard page. Thank you, Joe. We will share your resource that you shared with us, and we will revisit this subject. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are the computer guys, George Costello, he's an Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant with Ideology. We now go to the lightning round. that's thunder. You can't see the lightning, but there's more thunder.
We get it.
This is the radio, the lightning round.
Use your imagination.
Just talk
Let's
faster.
Start the lightning round now. We talked about operating systems at the top of the hour. Windows 8 is brand spanking new. Is this Microsoft's swan song with operating systems, man? We just heard that
Microsoft. It's their rebirth.
It's their rebirth.
It is the rebirth of Microsoft.
It could be looked at either way. Talk about that.
They're getting back into the game, I'm sure. Windows 8 is going to be officially released on Friday. I think, as I said earlier, they are attempting to provide an interface that is consistent across all the platforms.
A lot of pressure after the first quarterly loss ever. We're talking since the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Yep. They're under a lot of pressure. Microsoft has seen their market being eaten away by lots of competitors. They're not as dominant as they were in lots of areas that they were, you know, in. So they need to hit a home run here.
And Apple's under pressure of their pockets swelling. They're expected to make a big announcement Tuesday, October 23rd. Tomorrow, the Apple pundits are saying 7-inch mini iPad mini, 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yes.
Possibly a new iMac. Talk about that.
Well, you've already said it. I mean, those are the things that are on the agenda. We don't know for sure about the iMacs, but we do know that there's a revision that's in the works. And if they don't get it out the door pretty fast, they're going to miss the Christmas season. So I would say that's a good bet.
Anything that you might expect that we're not expecting with this Apple announcement tomorrow, October 23rd?
Just the iMacs. Nobody's mentioned that in the speculation about what's coming. And I think there's a strong chance that we could see those.
At the top of the hour, NPR mentioned Microsoft's Zune player, whatever that was. It's not no longer with us,
is what the
reporter said. A lot of high stakes with this new Surface tablet, which will start at $500.
Yes.
Can you say Zune?
No, wrong. I think the Surface tablet has a way of – I think it can work. But here's the important thing about it, I think. All of a sudden, Microsoft is manufacturing something. They have taken a Tegra chip. They've put it in here. They've added 32 gigs of RAM, which is not all available to you as a user, but into a pretty nice package. It doesn't have the resolution that the iPad 3 does with its so-called Retina display, which is a great display. No question about it.
So-called Retina display?
Well, they call it a Retina, but, you know, I mean, that's just a name, right?
Yeah. It's not like a component in your eye.
It's the name of a component in your eye.
Right, right.
So they have a good chance here of changing the trajectory of their business.
Yeah, the problem.
Even with Apple already in 70% market penetration.
But that's the problem, is that it's coming so late in the game. I mean, I agree with Tom. I mean, I think it's probably based on what he's described and what I've seen of it so far. It is a genuine improvement, but the problem is that most of the market has already deserted them. You know, that's
they'll come back.
Well, some may come back.
Speaking of late in the game, a Windows smartphone.
Yeah, that supposedly it's in development.
That'll show up sometime soon. It'll actually be, you know, a Nokia handset, and I think there's another maker for the handsets as well. I don't know that Microsoft is actually going to manufacture their own.
Nokia, there's a name we haven't heard in a while.
They're like this with Microsoft. That was tight.
He said like this. Together. He crossed his fingers together just in case you can't see him in the studio.
Right.
Nokia and Microsoft are like that. Google is joining the fray in what looks like a fortnight of huge announcements about tablets. Google is expected to announce it has a new tablet next week with the Android operating system at the helm. What can we expect from that?
You can expect a tablet with a
Android on it.
Yeah.
Is that why I bring you guys on here?
Right,
that's
exactly.
It. There you go.
That's what we get.
That'll be really fun too.
What are they expected to bring to the fray that the iPad?
Hey, everybody's
got to
have
has.
An announcement,
right?
Right. You know, now Google's making hardware. Now this is interesting, isn't it? Apple starts making hardware in the very beginning,
and
the other ones are finally getting the picture that they can make hardware and software together and
make it work better. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I think that both Google and Microsoft have been poorly served by the hardware manufacturers who are out after their own thing. So they've realized they need to marry those things closer together.
And speaking of something that will affect hardware and software alike, an increasing danger of zero-day exploits, which are original botnets, things that go bump in the night, malware coming from nothing, coming straight from inception.
A zero-day exploit is something that the antivirus, anti-malware people haven't put out a fix for yet.
Right, right.
And so there's that window of time. It could be minutes or it could be days
or weeks
before it's fixed.
Yeah.
So there was an exploit to Internet Explorer that affected versions 6, 7, 8, and 9 in September 17th. It wasn't fixed by Microsoft until the 22nd.
Or patched, as they say.
That was a five-day gap where you really should have not been using Internet Explorer.
There could also be brand new malware that's not related to a specific hole in a system or not, but just brand new zero-day malware.
But they always try to focus on something. So now it's Java, right? Java has been used on the Mac. It's used in browsers. It's used on the PC. And all of a sudden, it's getting shot at by lots of people who are finding the holes in Java. So Apple, in its latest OS release update, took Java out. It's not installing it. That's happening all around.
Speaking of Java, you got Java, you got coffee, you got coffee, you got restaurants, you got restaurants, you got Yelp. That's six degrees of excellence
separation.
Right there.
Yeah, right.
Restaurant review site Yelp changing its review policies?
Well, they're not just a restaurant review. They're a review of anything kind of thing in your community. But, you know, what we want to do when we are looking online for something is we want a recommendation from, you know, something that's authoritative that says this is a good place to go or that's a good product to buy. You read the reviews, and if they're paid for by a manufacturer and have somebody writing it to say that it's good to basically promote it, that's not a review. So what Yelp is doing is they're calling that out, and they will make a banner for 90 days on that review so that you know that it's been paid for.
Okay. Time Warner started charging new internet customers a monthly rental fee for their cable modem.
Yeah,
with Google Fiber coming.
Brilliant.
Reaction was, you know, are you guys nuts? I mean, here you've got all this competition that's literally on your doorstep. And, it reminds me of the banks. You remember how the banks, they would start charging you for anything you did, any kind of a service. It was like having an account entitled you to nothing. And anything they did, there was a little nick here, a little fee there, a little something here. And they're scratching to come up with new ways to generate revenue. Well, I wish them luck in the Kansas City market.
Tom, incognito, private browsing, not as anonymous as you may think.
If you have Chrome or Firefox or Safari and you see that little private browsing, open a new window, a private browsing window, or in Chrome, it's called an incognito window. And if you think that truly makes you incognito, you are wrong.
Wrong,
yeah. Wrong, wrong.
So even if
that's
you wear glasses
message.
And a trench coat while you browse, it doesn't help?
That will help. That will help, but only for people who can actually see you. No, the truth of the matter is that they all they do, this is hilarious, I think. So I'm making it a little too simple. But when you go get an incognito window, it just erases the tracks on your computer. It does not completely erase them, but it takes it out of your history and so forth. So somebody else that uses your computer may not know that you went someplace on that incognito window. However, the website knows you were there. All the advertisers know you were there. If you happen to be dumb enough to sign into something while you're incognito, then they'll really know that you were there and they can track you. So don't think that you're truly incognito.
You can't even say I'm incognito while you're typing.
Right.
That won't help.
Turn your computer off and then you can be incognito.
Last year, for the first time, spending by Apple and Google on patent lawsuits and unusually big dollar patent purchases exceeded research and development expenditures. Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, this is, you know, we've talked to you. This is one of your favorite subjects because every month.
This is one of your least favorite subjects.
I know. But this is the reason. I mean, this thing has escalated to the point where it's a big deal now. And thinking about it, I really think that Apple, you know, who has been very aggressive in a lot of different markets just here and overseas, I really think Apple is doing a disservice to itself because, you know, they are like at Samsung's throat, for example. And, you know, Samsung is a first-rate electronics company. Apple was Samsung's biggest single customer. Samsung makes some of the state-of-the-art screens and solid-state hard drives and other devices now, and Apple is basically cutting themselves off from access.
So you're saying why not put that money back in R&D?
I'm saying that it's gotten out of hand.
Speaking of getting out of hand, Apple is being sued over a deal locking the iPhone into the AT&T network. Two users, iPhone users Zach Ward and Thomas Bucher, filed a punitive class action lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Northern California, alleging that the tech giant violated antitrust laws by locking these iPhone buyers into voice and data contracts with AT&T. What's that about?
I don't know. Haven't we been here before on that?
They don't want to be in contracts with AT&T, and
but they want to use AT&T. They just don't want to have. They don't want to be forced
to use the iPhone.
Correct.
AT&T's pension plan is underfunded by $10.2 billion. At the end of last Friday, AT&T said it's seeking government approval to contribute a stake in its wireless business to the tune of $9.5 billion to pay into their pension.
You sprung that on me this morning.
I did.
You know, it's laudable that they're actually going to try and fund their fund their pension system.
But this is a sort of endemic problem across all industries.
Well, of course it is, but not all industries have a highly profitable wireless segment to throw the money at.
Right, as AT&T does.
Right.
George IMAX, made in 2009 with faulty Seagate hard drives, are now covered under an extended warranty program. What's that about?
Yeah, every so often, manufacturers will institute what some people refer to as a stealth warranty. There was a whole run of hard drives that failed prematurely, and so Apple, just a couple of weeks ago, quietly instituted this extended warranty. You can get details about it on Apple's website, but it was 1 terabyte Seagate drives that were the problem. And if you have one of those machines that was made basically from 2009 to all the way up through 2011, you qualify for a free replacement. Simple as that.
Yahoo's Marissa Mayer, the company's audacious CEO, looking to take Yahoo back to its technology roots. Quick thought, Tom?
I hope so.
There you go.
Sooner the better.
There you go. This has been the Tech Lightning Round with Thunder, rounding up the latest technology news with our guests, the computer guys George Costello, an Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, an enterprise IT consultant with Ideology. Thank you for coming, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we celebrate National Pizza Month with a talk about pizza. That plus 100 years of the Jim Theater in the 18th and Vine District. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander. Up to Date is next with a talk with the creator of the comic strip Oatmeal. Plus more guests. I'm Javelani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.